Welcome to the Fearless Podcast. In a time of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the Fearless Podcast. This is episode 30.
Episode 30, y'all. Glad to be here.
And it is a cold, blustery day in Texas, but we're excited to have y'all on. And as always, don't forget about our sponsor, thetexasboys.com. We got the food forest in a box. They're flying off the shelves. So if you're looking to grow a food 401k, if you're looking to get into like a permaculture orchard or something like that, you can get our cuttings, learn the art of rooting, and start growing your own perennial food.
Absolutely.
And it is an incredibly exciting, fun process. Check out what we got going on at thetexasboys.com. And today, y'all, I am incredibly excited.
Very excited.
We have Jason from Sow the Land, and we've been following their story basically since inception.
Yeah, literally.
Since we got the homesteading bug.
We were watching Justin Rhodes, I remember it, and then this guy came over, and then he was like, I think you were working on a school bus, I think. Yep. And then that's when you started your YouTube channel, and that's when we started following you.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep.
When you were doing the schoolie conversions.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. I was working with another guy converting school buses into tiny homes. And, you know, at that time, I didn't know who Justin Rhodes was.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I didn't know he had a YouTube channel until they're like, hey, this one YouTube guy wants to convert a bus, so let's go over there, you know. So I worked only worked like maybe a few days on the bus here and there, but
That's funny.
That is so cool. So Jason, so y'all are in North Carolina.
Yes.
And your story is it's an awesome story of victory. And it is it's a very encouraging story. Tell us, you're not from North Carolina.
No, I'm not. Can you tell by my accent?
Yeah. like you can tell I'm not from Texas, right?
Yeah.
But we got here. I got here as soon as I could. So,
yep.
So maybe if you could give us a little bit of your background, because now you're homesteading, you're on 14 acres. And you're doing all this awesome stuff, and you're basically kind of just doing it as a family of three. It's very neat and inspiring. But maybe if you could give us a little bit of your background, like pre-homesteading, pre-North Carolina, like where are you from? What did you used to do? And how did you end up where you're at?
Yeah. First of all, I appreciate you having me on. I was born and raised in Southern California, just outside of LA. Never lived anywhere else. You know, that's where me and my wife went to the same high school. That's where we met. We've been together ever since. And I believe this journey that we're on now of homesteading, like we left California in 2016 to start this journey. And it was right around that time, well, probably 6 years prior. So about 2010, I got diagnosed with cancer. And Hodgkin's lymphoma is what I got, stage 2. You know, at the time, doctor told me if you're going to get cancer, that's the best one, whatever that means. You know, he probably tells that to everybody. prior to that, you know, we didn't grow up around growing food or gardens. You know, I don't think I ever knew anyone that had a garden or even growing a tomato plant in their backyard. It just wasn't it wasn't part of our lives. It wasn't a thing. Like both me and my wife, both of us, didn't grow around chickens or farm animals like that. And so when you get cancer, it was like kind of like this surprise, and it's this eye-opener thing. Like I always thought that I thought we were fairly healthy people, you know. I just turned 30. So we're young, and to get cancer at 30 years old, it was like, man, this doesn't happen to people, right? Like it only happens to people in the movies or something. So it was during that time was when we tried to figure out, man, maybe we should, you know, eat more healthier or you know, be more active. I don't know, just kind of take control of our own health. And I did 6 months of chemo, you know, lost my hair and everything. And that's all I did. It was, you know, just 6 months. Every other week I was getting chemo, and that was it. Been in remission ever since.
Awesome. Yeah, praise the Lord.
And so it was during that time was when we were trying to figure all of it out as far as trying to be healthy. And I remember my last oncology appointment where she finally told me that, oh, you're in remission. You have no more cancer. You know, I asked her, you know, what now? You know, all these appointments, all these scans, all these PET scans, all these blood work and tests. And it was like 6 months of just all in, and everything happens so fast, and it's very traumatic. You know, it's a roller coaster of emotions the whole time, of up and down, of not feeling good, of losing, you know, it's just hard on everybody, like all the family, all my family, my wife. And so I always thought, like, what now? Like, that's it. You know, I just go on my merry way. And the doctor, she just said, yeah, you do. You just go back living how you were, go back to your normal life, is what she said. And it wasn't good enough for me. Like I didn't understand, you know. I always felt like there, you know, I thought maybe there was some kind of protocol they would put me on of, you know, I don't know, vitamins or
something. Okay.
Yeah. Nutrition plan. I don't know. I felt like I needed something. And she said, there's nothing. Like, it's just go, you're going to feel better. You're going to, you know, just go back to your normal life, how you're living. And so for a year after that, we did try to go back, you know, like I thought, okay, well, maybe we just go back to our normal life. And I was feeling, you know, I was feeling better every day, you know, grew my hair back, and I was feeling good. And slowly though, within that year, I started to think like, man, it's kind of, I guess it was eating away at me. Like, there should be more to life than what we're doing. You know, I worked in an office job. I just had a 9-to-5 office job. I did that for 17 years. You know, we went to school, have, you know, bachelor's, master's degree. And my wife, she worked in the fashion industry. She had her career, and she, you know, she would travel, you know, 3 hours into traffic to LA every day, you know. And so slowly everything, as far as trying to be healthy, trying to take control of our own health and change our life and the job, the career, all of that was just kind of eating away at me. And I started to think, like, what, there's gotta be more to life than this. Like, I'm doing the same thing over and over again for the last 17 years of sitting in an office, and it became comfortable. It became easy. And right around that time, we started to think, like, maybe we should start growing our own food, because how are we going to really know how to grow? How are we really going to know what's in our food unless we grow it ourselves? So that's when we started to, you know, dive in, you know, gluten-free kind of became popular, and paleo type thing. And so we started to do that, to experiment with, like, gluten-free stuff and cutting out grains and starting to feel good and be more active, hiking and stuff like that. And then we, you know, we had bought our first house, and we grew a backyard, a little garden in our backyard there. And then, you know, we started joking around, you know, you grow that first tomato plant and you're like, all of a sudden you feel like a farmer. And you're like, hey, let's go find some land somewhere. Like, wouldn't it be cool to find some land somewhere? Like, maybe we could grow chickens or something like that, or grow our own meat. And it kind of became like a joke. Like, yeah, that would never happen. You know, that sounds cool. But honestly, that would never happen, because we grew up all in that same area, and like all of our families there. I never saw us leaving the area. And then I would say about a good 6 years gone by. And during that time is when we started getting rid of stuff. Like, things just started not matter anymore. You know, we had a 4-bedroom house, you know, we had all these couches, you know, in rooms that we never went in. And and stuff in our garage that we never even touched. And so slow, we started getting rid of stuff in our house. And because we're, you know, we're joking around like, hey, well, if we become farmers one day, we're not going to need all this stuff.
That's funny.
And at that time too, my wife, she eventually became a stay at home mom because we had our first daughter, our only daughter. And she left her career in the fashion industry to be a stay at home mom. And I was still at my office job and I didn't know how to get out of that.
Yeah. You know, the money's good. And what was your occupation, Jason? What field were you in?
It was computer drafting. So I would do like architectural kind of engineering plans, on the computer. I mean, it can be very comfortable. You get a paycheck every Friday, you get paid vacations, a gas card, you know, that's very comfortable and very appealing. And so it's hard to like leave that. And so probably a good 6 years, we got rid of a lot of stuff in our house. And then eventually we're like, man, we have all the only thing we really had, all the stuff on the walls were gone. We had one couch and, you know, we had a kitchen table pretty much left in the house. Our house was getting bare and we're still like, you know, we kept talking about this homesteading. I don't know if we even called it homesteading even back then, because there wasn't really like how YouTube is today. Like there's so many homesteading channels. It wasn't that back then. You know, I don't think we even really looked at YouTube and social media like that. So it was just us just thinking like we wanted more land. And so eventually we had this kitchen table and it was like, okay, if we sell this kitchen table, then I think we're pretty serious about doing this. And so we sold our kitchen table. Shortly thereafter, we sold our first house and we said, you know what? I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how this is going to work, but I feel like we need to sell this house. And the plan was we're going to live with mom for a year because she lived like on the next street over, and live with our mom, my mom with a year. And within that year, we're going to figure it out. Like we're going to see about maybe buying some land somewhere. I don't know where that was. And that's what we did. We wanted to stay in California. We did. Because all our family was there. That's what we knew, that we had a community there. We had good friends. I mean, it was great. I mean, we thought it was great, but we learned very quickly that we needed like $1 million to buy land because it's so expensive. And we didn't really realize that until we actually looked. And there's not a whole lot of land in LA, you know? And so we looked up kind of up and down the coast of California, kind of in kind of out west, and we took vacations places and just kind of see what we wanted to do. And it was tough. And, you know, also getting out of debts was important. So eventually we knew of a couple that moved out to the Asheville, North Carolina area. They were from LA and they're like, hey, you got to come out here and just to check it out. You know, there's a lot of like-minded people out here doing what you want to do, as far as growing food and stuff. And so we went, we didn't look at any properties. We just went there just to look, because honestly, the furthest east we've ever been was New Mexico.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
We had no idea what the East Coast or even Midwest or anywhere the South was at. We didn't know how it was. You know, you hear stories and watch movies and stuff. That was the extent of it. And so we went on vacation for a week out in North Carolina. And we really, just in that week, we really didn't know anybody. We just kind of walked around and just to kind of check it out. And we really fell in love with the community. Like we felt like there was a good sense of community out here and a lot of small farms and people doing what we want to do. And I think also because it was so much different than California, as far as there was green everywhere, there was a bunch of trees, there was water, you know, like, you know, it had the seasons and it was very appealing. So then when we went back home after that vacation, you know, we didn't look at any properties. We're just like, you know, 6 months passed, another 6 months passed, and we're like, man, the only way we're going to really know if I go out there, I have to go out there and look at properties. Mm-hmm. Because I could look online all day. You know, I scoured like Craigslist, yeah. You know, and even just these, you know, realtor websites, and I really didn't know the area. So it was hard to pick a spot, you know? And so I flew on a weekend out here by myself, and I was like, I'm just going to go there and look at properties and see what comes up. And so on a weekend, I think I saw like 12 different properties.
Wow.
You know, this is the end of 2015. So it was a different time back then. I mean, it was like so many properties were abandoned. Like nobody was, these properties were sitting there for years.
Yeah.
And so I ended up finding one. It was 1.5 acres. It pretty much checked off everything off the list that we wanted. Not the area we were looking for initially, but it was a little bit closer to town, which that was another thing, because I kind of wanted something closer to the town because I didn't know what I was going to do for work. So we ended up buying the 1.5 acres. Well, I'll take a step back there. So after we sold the house, you know, we made some money off of the house and we're living with mom and paying off debts and stuff. You know, I still had, we had massive student loan debts.
Right.
Which we sold, we paid off a lot of it, but we still had a lot. And so we had two options. We had, you know, everyone, you read all the books and all the online stuff, and they tell you, you need to get out of debts, right? You need to pay off your debt before you do anything crazy, like quitting your job, you know? So I had two options. I was like, one, we could pay off our debts, and we had just enough money to pay off all of our student loans, and we would be 100% debt free. I could do that, or we could go buy some land somewhere and try to make this dream happen. And so I said, it was a tough decision because everyone told me you need to pay off your debts.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I don't want to do that. It doesn't sound fun to me. Like that's going to be all of our money.
Yeah.
And then where we're going to be at, we're going to be at zero. And we would have to save up again to make the move. And so we ended up buying that 1.5 acres. And we still had debt. I didn't even have enough money to buy the whole 1.5 acres. I had to take out a mortgage on it. You know, I had a single wide rundown mobile home. That place was abandoned for a whole, I think it was a year. There was no one living on it. And that's what we did. And we decided to leave. And, you know, in the end, we sold most of our stuff, and we still had student loan debt, and we had that mortgage on the new house now, new property, and we packed what we had up, and we left and moved across the country with our 4-year-old, me and my wife, and we really didn't know how was it going to work, what was going to happen. We didn't really know anybody out here. We didn't have no family. I'd quit my job because I didn't know another way to do it. I tried to look for a job first before moving out here, and I couldn't find it. It was so hard because I just lived across the country. Like, who's going to want to hire me? So the last resort was like, I'm just going to quit. Like, we have some money saved still, and I'm just going to quit and just find a job out there when we get out there. And that was the plan. And the plan was, my goal was, I didn't want to go back to an office job ever. And we wanted to figure out how to work
Jason,
together.
That's what you went to school for. And that was your education. And, you know, why would you throw that all away?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it ate away at me so much that I just was tired of doing the same thing over and over again. And I really wanted to like do stuff with my hands, like be outside and dig in the dirt and build stuff. And I think it just kept eating away at me. And I thought, man, there's got to be more to life than what I'm doing here. And so, you know, we wanted to figure out how to work for ourselves as like a business. Never go back to an office job and try to grow as much food as we possibly can for ourselves and be more self-sufficient as possible. And we've been doing that ever since. I haven't been back to an office job and nice. we're still trying to make it work out here.
Yeah. And that's you're great. Not on 1.5 acres.
No. So yeah, we're there for a good, I think 6 years.
Okay.
Awesome.
And then I felt like we outgrew that place. We fixed up the mobile home. We raised, a bunch of animals on it and we outgrew it, honestly. Mm-hmm. And we moved to 14 acres, last year. And, going from 1.5 acres to 14 acres, we might as well be on 100 acres.
Yeah.
It's so much bigger and so much room to grow. And, when we bought the 1.5 acres, that was kind of in back of our minds, that was our goal, our plan to, first of all, we didn't know if we liked doing any of this stuff. Like, are we really going to like it? Or is it just a romantic idea that we had in our brain that it sounds cool and it sounds fun, but when it comes down to it, are we really going to like it? And so, yeah, we fell in love with it. We loved it. And, but we treated that 1.5 acres as kind of like a test, kind of like a, like a school, like it was going to just teach us how to do stuff. Teach us how to run our own business, teach us how to just live for ourselves and see if we like it. And then from there, sell the property, build it from nothing, sell it. We made a profit off of it and then buy the bigger land that we want.
That's awesome.
That's so neat. There's so many takeaways.
Yeah.
The reason I love this story is there's so many takeaways. One takeaway is just do it. Two is all the excuses that everybody has, and we did the same thing, we sold everything and moved 1400 miles to a place we didn't know where we didn't know anybody.
Yep.
And there's a lot of similarities in our story.
Yeah. We didn't even come down here before. We just came down here with a little box trailer and the family. And we were like, all right, now we just got to find a place.
Yeah.
No job lined out, just like you.
And what's so neat about your story, right, is like so many people will be like, well, that's let's nuts. Find the perfect property first, and they never find
There's no such thing as a perfect property.
Right, or it'll be like years before they find it.
Right. Or that, yep.
Thought about that. We thought about hey, let's just get an RV and just go around and try to find other properties, because we didn't look at other places. We didn't look at Michigan. I didn't look at Texas. I didn't look at those. I'm sure there was other places out there, but I felt like we didn't have that much money. I felt like, and plus I didn't have a job. And so I felt like if we got an RV, we would just be spending the money, I was like, we're all in, we're 100%. Let's go do this. And this is what we want to do, and let's go do it.
That's awesome. And that's largely why it worked. That's largely why you were successful at it, because you weren't half stepping and
fully committed.
And then not only that, you were able to do it successfully and then scale it.
Yeah.
And now retrospectively, if you look back, right, when you guys were originally looking at properties, in a very real way, your current property was that's really what I want. And so you got that. It took 6 years. It took a lot of sweat equity. It took hard work. It took a lot of delayed gratification.
Yep.
And the other thing that I think is just so encouraging about your story is the part where you talk about student loans and get out of debt and pay everything off. And, you know, while that is wise, right? Sure. If you would have done that, it would have put you 6 years or more further behind. Yep. And you were able to do it anyway. And, you know, there's so many great encouraging takeaways and all of these limiting factors that are people's excuses for not doing it.
Yeah. And then even being able to take less than a 2 acre property and be able to homestead on it. Like with our first property here, it was 5 acres and we only homestead 2 acres of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And learning how to use every little space to its maximum is so important, because I see so many homesteaders buy 20, 30, 40, 50 acres and they spread all their stuff out across this whole entire big thing and they never can get to any of it. They never can attend any of it. When being forced to homestead and learn all your skills to be as efficient as possible, small scale, and then slowly scale it up like you did, you know, going from less than 2 acres to 14 acres, you know, now you got loads of breathing room, but you have 6 years of experience homesteading on a small piece of land and being able to now expand that to 14 acres, you're going to be able to just do so much with it because you know how to work on a small piece of land.
Yeah. And I think that that's important because, I look back sometimes and I think like, well, you know, people ask me too, like, would you wish that you bought more land initially than the 1.5 acres? And I don't, I mean, because honestly, I think if we started on the 14 acres,
sure,
I don't think we would have been successful. I think I would have burnt out pretty fast.
Sure.
Because especially with no experience, we had no experience doing any of this stuff. And so when you get on a huge land like this, I mean, it feels like a national park or something I live on. It feels so big to me, but it really is not, but it is
maintenance wise.
I'm like, I'm just a janitor here and that's all I am. I'm the maintenance man. But yeah, I mean, just like, no, I think the one starting on the small scale, it just helped us a ton and helped me realize what is possible. And I know you mentioned the student loan thing. You know, we could have paid off our student loan at first, right? And you said, yeah, exactly what you said. It would take another 6 years to save up on money, or it never would have happened.
Right.
Yes. We never would have left. You know, that would have been some dream, and then kind of would have just came and went, and it'd be like, oh, that would have been cool. But yeah, it just didn't work out. So the momentum was there. The green lights were happening all over the place. And it was somebody was telling me, just pushing me in the back and say, you need to go. So 6 years after we left, we ended up paying off all of our student loans.
Awesome.
You know, like it didn't happen then, but just waited and waited and keep at it. And eventually we're able to pay it all off.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. And so you achieved the same thing, you know, it's so beautiful, this small scale idea. Cause that, I think that's so we, you know, during the whole, 2020, you know, there is definitely a homestead tsunami that Joel Salatin talks about, but when the world locked down, right, there was definitely a urban exodus where these city slickers came to the country.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've experienced is they have already went back.
Yeah.
Like we've seen people, especially when they try to buy raw land, we've seen people buy raw land. We see them go out there
20, 30 acres
and try to make a go of it, you know? And then they're like, man, I kind of miss the cul-de-sac and the, you know, and the Walmart.
I miss sidewalks.
Yeah.
And that's really because they bit off more than they could chew.
Sure.
You know what I mean? They're like, they dove in head first.
Yeah.
And I mean, there is nothing more incredible than raw land, like buying raw land. And then even if you're buying like partially cleared land, it's like a whole different world than just buying like untempered.
That's what we did. Like literally the only part that was cleared on our property was the front yard. The rest of the four, like four and a half acres in the back was thicket. And we had to clear it all.
It was Texas weeds.
Texas weeds, trees, and everything. So we had to carve it all out. So, man, it's just, I think it is a, like for people getting into homesteading, it's personally for me, I think, you know, one day having a goal to one day have 10 plus acres, but hey, if that opportunity comes up and that property comes up and it's, you know, 1, 2, 3 acres, go for it, you know? So,
yeah. Or say if, you know, you just can't help it and you want to get the bigger property, but maybe I already have the plan of like only work on 1 acre for a year, for maybe a few years, get that almost like you're acting like you only have 1 acre.
Sure. Focus and concentrate.
Yeah. And then keep like building out from there as you're more comfortable, you know, you're getting more used to the whole idea of that. So you won't be overwhelmed because you're going to get overwhelmed no matter what,
you still get overwhelmed, right?
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, that's
projects,
life, right?
And everything. Yeah.
Life is overwhelming sometimes. So Jason, so you quit your job, you abandoned your college degree. You know, first off, if you grew up in the Prussian school system, in the government school like I did, you know, you go to school to get a good education, to get a good job, right? So that you can invest and retire, right? Well, we're probably real close in age. I'm 48 now, I think. So I graduated in 94. So I'm I was getting
graduated in 97.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, that was the paradigm that we were brainwashed with, you know, go to school, get a good education, get a good job. So, you know, I did the same thing. Now you turned your back and you spit on all of that. Right. And then you moved several thousand miles on the opposite side of the country. You didn't know anybody. You didn't have any job prospects. Yeah. So how come you're not dead? Like how do you eat food?
I know. Like it's so scary. You know, when you do something like that, it's so scary. Cause everyone's telling you like, oh man, you're not. And it feels like you're taking a step backwards. It feels like, you know, especially when we moved in with mom for a year, like I didn't want to move in with mom. You know, I felt horrible. I felt like I'm not worthy. Yeah. You know, like I am taking a step backwards, and leaving my nice job was taking a step backwards, and living in a single wide mobile home was taking a step backwards, and a rundown abandoned property. I was like, what am I doing? But you know, it just didn't matter. Like certain things didn't matter. And we had a goal in mind. And, you know, when we moved out here, it was like, what was I going to do for work? So, I mean, everything that, like, I try to be more aware of opportunity that would come my way, more aware of people. And it was important for us to meet people, of course, and just asking around. And for many, probably a good 3 or 4 years, it was saying yes to everything, everything, even putting in a toilet at someone's house, putting in a sink. You know, I became kind of like a handyman type that would just say yes to everything. I would ask friends and be like, hey, what do you need? You know, I'm looking to make some money, you know, looking to pay some bills here, because realistically you gotta work, you gotta pay, there's bills. I mean, we had a mortgage to pay, you know, cell phone insurance and stuff like that. So, you know, I think people think, oh, you're just going to live off the land. And, you know, what do you do for work? I used to get that a lot.
Yes. Yeah.
Because I think in our minds, when we see people homesteading, you know, well, at least back then for us, it was like, man, what do these people do for a living? You know, what do they do for work? Maybe they don't work. You know, I used to think that, like, maybe you can just live off the land and just grow your own food and butcher your own animals. And you know, that thought did cross my mind. And then after we moved out here and actually meeting people in real life that do grow their own food, I come to realize that there is no magic thing.
No.
There is no secret. The secret is hard work. That's the secret.
That's it.
Very and correct.
People are doing multiple things to make it work. And I, you know, back in California, I think pretty much everyone that I knew had one good job.
Yeah. Wow.
Right? Yeah. That's where we're all told to get that one good job.
Yep.
But when I moved out here and meeting farmers and homesteaders, and I don't think I ever met anyone with one good job.
Right.
It was all seasonal. It was all part-time work, but they were all doing what they loved.
Hustling. Yeah.
Yeah. It was called the homestead hustle.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
And everyone was making it work, and it was beautiful. And I felt very inspired by the people that we met when we first came out here, because I thought, man, these people are just normal people and they're just doing it. You know, they didn't have YouTube channels either.
That's right.
You know, nobody I knew had a YouTube channel, and it was great. And it was very inspiring to me. And I thought, okay, if these people could do it, we could do it. And it was great.
So now, all these years removed, 2024, what do you do now for your main source of income? Or is it just still like a polymath, like menagerie of a little bit of everything?
So now, I mean, you know, we started doing YouTube in, I think, around 2016, you know, just slowly building that up while I said yes to all the other jobs. And I knew eventually, you know, if I keep at it with this YouTube thing and just keep, you know, be consistent with it, I think eventually it's going to take over everything else I do. I saw it happening early on if I just keep at it. And so probably a good 4 years of doing YouTube where I finally said, okay, I think YouTube's taking over as far as paying all the bills.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so in the past few years, it has been taking over. Awesome. It can be very demanding.
Yeah.
You guys know. And so now I do mainly the videos. I mean, the online content, but also, you know, last few years, we've done more in-person workshops that mm-hmm. we do here on our homestead, and we teach people how to butcher chickens. They come here and we show them in person how to do that stuff, and even pigs. But the online content, you know, we have online workshops, specific workshops that we've created, and, you know, stuff that we have on our website, and, you know, merchandise. You know, my background's engineering, computer drafting, so I still do that, but I do that for myself now. Like some of the things that we build, like chicken coops and stuff like that, you know, I make plans for that. And we have those available on our website. So, you know, just little stuff like that. But it's the, you know, online content that has been really very good to us. But I do see, I think our future though is, I don't think it's the online content. I mean, I think it's always going to be there,
mm-hmm.
but I see the more the in-person type workshop things going to be more of our thing. I mean, I feel more satisfied when I'm teaching somebody how to do something in person, like in real life, mm-hmm. instead of on a video.
Right.
It's just more satisfying to me, and be able to like shake a hand, and 100%. Hug a person, you know, and talking with them, it's just very satisfying to me, and I feel like that's what our future is going to be like as we move forward.
Great. That sounds awesome. And so now, so you have a YouTube channel. I think you also have a podcast.
Yeah. Last year I started a podcast, the Homestead Shop Talk podcast with Ben Holler from Holler Homestead and Al Lumna from Lumna Acres. You know, I had this idea of a podcast a couple years ago, and I didn't want to be the one to do the podcast, right? Because mm-hmm. it's just another thing to do. And,
yeah. you know,
recording it like this, like this takes some thought.
Yeah. Yes.
Like getting the mics, the headphones, and getting the logistics and the,
there's way more than just mics and headphones.
Yeah. Especially like when you have crummy country internet.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that too. Yeah. Like, I don't have the best internet, but you know, yeah. Like just the whole behind the scenes of starting the even video, like doing the YouTube channel, like creating content, online content in a more rural setting. It's hard.
Painful.
Yeah. It's hard to figure out. So, but anyways, I started it and I asked those two guys to be on it with me. And it's just us just talking shop, really. I mean, those guys have been doing the homestead thing for a number of years, just like me. And it's like, there's more to it than what people see in a 10, 15 minute video.
Yeah. A lot more,
you know? So I thought it'd be fun just to get together and we're just hanging out and talking about homestead life.
Cool. Yeah, it's really cool. I've been listening to it's a cool podcast, especially if you're into homesteading, and then there's a lot of overlap where we're all YouTubers and different things. So it's a cool kind of behind the curtain thing. And it's like a more in-depth, you know, and you get to meet and understand the personalities. It's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, we enjoy it. So now you're on this 14 acres. Oh, there was another question I wanted to ask you. How do you like growing cows?
Oh, they're fun. When we first got here, you know, we got two steers, called them my beefy boys. And they were a joy. Like they were fun. I would argue and say, man, those might have been the easiest animal I've ever raised.
I agree. That's my conclusion.
Yeah. Even easier than chickens.
Yeah. Seriously, they are. Cows are. I'll tell you what.
I mean, they were great. I mean, we raised them only for a year. We had them for a year and we butchered them.
Nice.
And so I hope to get more because we're already running out of meat. But I liked them. I liked them a lot. They're easy.
So speaking of, you know, getting more cows, what's the future of the 14 acres? Like what's the next part of the dream? I know you mentioned, you know, more in real life, in person kind of classes and whatnot, but infrastructure wise, I know you're building a high tunnel and been enjoying following that process because we built a DIY high tunnel.
Yeah. It was funny. We were watching like every episode, and every time your episode would come out and we would watch it, we were like, yep, same thing. Like you hit the rock in the ground. And we're like, we know absolutely what that feeling's like. Yeah. But we had we didn't have that fancy machine post pounder.
Oh,
we
had
hand. So we would just take turns with the T post pounder.
Oh.
We were out there for hours. And then you hit the rock.
Literally.
And then it's just like it like mushrooms out on the top. And you gotta cut it off.
No, I know. Yeah. There's no rocks on I never hit a rock on the property, but then the one place that you need it, there's a rock. But I'm telling you, that T post pounder, that gas power T post pounder, man, like that. I've used that thing so many times already.
Yeah, and for a greenhouse DIY, because that's what I said. We do our next one, that'll be an absolute.
Totally.
Yeah, because I'm doing fencing too at the same time. And so I thought, man, I need to get this pounder because I'm going to be doing a high tunnel and fencing, and I'm basically pretty much work by myself or over here.
Yeah.
So anything that can help me,
sure,
where it's not gonna put me in debt. I'm gonna buy,
They're pretty inexpensive, actually. I saw them at my local farm store, a couple $100,
right?
Yep.
So, I mean, as far as our future here, I mean, I finished the high tunnel this winter, finished the fencing this winter because I want to get some more beefy boys and maybe some sheep.
Cool,
I would love to do some sheep. And then I feel like we're still starting out here. I mean, we've only been here over a year. And, as far as, water lines and stuff like that, have it be out here.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to still figure it out. Like where we're going to run animals and stuff like that. I feel like the first year, you know, you get excited when you move onto a property and you want to buy all the animals. And that's what we did the first year.
Yeah.
And we weren't, you know, I probably shouldn't have done that. Like I probably shouldn't have got the beef cows. Because I feel like we weren't very set up for it, but we did it and we made it work and we made it happen. And, but it really taught me a lot too, at the same time of like what we really needed, you know,
like, sure.
I don't want to be running 900 feet of hose everywhere.
Right. Yeah. The water infrastructure. Yeah.
Yeah. That gets old pretty quick.
Yeah. Very. Yeah.
But you could do it, you know, not to discourage anyone. Just, you know, sometimes you just got to go get the animals and just figure it out.
Yeah.
And you will figure it out.
Oh, yeah, you will.
Because you have no choice.
Yeah, for real.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess just those things. And we have our, we have Cooney pigs that are fun. And we'll probably have more piglets, I think, you know, if everything goes well at the end of March.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah. We hope any day. It'll probably be the coldest day in Texas.
She is so pretty. Yeah. Right she's, now. We have a pair of Cooney pigs.
Oh, yeah, we do. Okay.
Yeah. Man, she is pregnant.
Oh, my goodness.
All get out.
So, does yours Cooney pigs root at all?
Very minimal.
Very minimal. Except for our young male. He roots. I've never seen Cooney's root as much as he does.
But he does. Because he's young.
He's young and full of it. And he's not like fat.
Our other two mature ones did not root at all.
No. Yeah, they would graze a little bit. Yeah. They might snort around barely, but nah.
But so have you butchered one yet?
Yes, we did. Yeah.
We just got, how many pounds of bacon did we get off of him?
Good amount.
Yeah, I think we got like 10 or 15 pounds of bacon off of him.
He was big too.
He was a big guy.
Are you pretty happy with him?
Very much. You know, they're so docile.
Yeah, they roll over on their belly and let you scratch their belly. I mean, they're a glorified pet.
They are. But the quality of the meat is pretty awesome. So it's like, you know, they're slow growing and
whatever.
Like we have multiple orchards, multiple food forests, and
we rotate them.
Yeah, so we permanently fence them in, and so we just rotate
every couple months. We rotate them. They knock down all the brush and everything. They don't even have to knock down the brush. They just keep all of the trees all maintained underneath them. And yeah, that's been the best system. They fertilize. They barely root a little bit if there's some mulch in their pen, but they're really quiet. You know, except for when it's feeding time, then they'll squeal a little bit, but
they're bangers,
run up. Yeah. But other than that, they're super chill. Like, and then also like around this area, the Cooney market is really like exploded actually. And I was like, man, she had beans or pigs. She had 7 babies last year. And I'm like, I'm not going to be able to sell these things because everybody has them for sale. And man, they sold like hotcakes. Yeah. It was crazy. I was so surprised that we even sold them. We sold them all out in a week. And already our buddy William from the Permaculture Consultant has already pre-ordered all of the babies from Beans. And she hasn't even given birth yet. But he's like, I'll take them all.
Wow. Yeah, we sold 3 last year because they had babies last year and we kept 4. Yeah. So the 4 we plan on eating, plan on butchering. I think they probably won't be ready till this coming winter.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
But I mean, with the Cooneys, I like the main reason that I love them so much is that they maintain the orchards. Like that is the best thing ever because they just, when we have a couple orchards back in the day when we didn't have the pigs and we wouldn't do anything about it. And we would have to try to maintain all the brush around the trees and the weeds and everything. And it's just like, even on a little, you know, even if the back one is like 200 by 200 square and man, it's a lot of work trying to keep all the brush from growing up and everything, but putting the pigs out there. And then on top of that, if you get a male and you have a breeding pair, then when they have their babies, then they pay for their feed. And then you can at least butcher a couple of them too.
Yeah.
So it's great. Yeah.
So they're pretty gentle on the trees then.
They are, you know, the mail, our mail was really big and you know, you're going to want to protect your immature trees because he's going to want to scratch his butt on all the trees.
Right. Yeah.
But like, other than that, like if they wouldn't itch on the trees, they would
all
be
of our trees fine. That we have them, like the orchards that we have them in, all the trees are older than 6 years now.
Four years now.
And, they all do really well. You just don't want to put pigs in when there's like little baby trees or anything like that.
Right.
So.
I see. Okay.
No, which you can, and you just fence around it.
You just would have the fence around it. We've done that in the past. You know, you put your T-posts around it, you know,
and fence it in so they can't crush it because they'll like go to itch on it and demolish.
Yeah. Or they'll just walk over it, not even knowing, you know.
Yeah, I know. They're too cute too. I don't know.
They are. You know, you don't have to worry about getting like gored or anything. Yeah.
So the other thing too is we butchered our really big male and, because he went deaf and he was partially blind because of just like all of his fur over his eyes and everything like that. So he would walk into stuff all the time. He would just boom and then like, oh man, what in the world? And then he would freak out a little bit. So we got him butchered, poor guy. And anyway, so now we have a son and his name's Dan. So we call him Danny.
Danny boy.
And man, he's hilarious. He'll be like, Danny. And he'll come squealing and like running over, put his head through the fence.
They really are like,
know they're so hilarious. And so, they're hilarious.
And they want their belly scratched. So you start petting them and they roll over. So. I mean, they're
great animals. If anybody listening, if you want a great starter pig, Cooney pigs is the way to go. They're great. Yeah,
sure. I agree. They're fun.
Yeah.
Now, what are the other, because you have another type of pig. You have like a, what's the other type of pig y'all raise?
So currently we just have the Coonies.
Oh, just the Coonies. Okay.
We did have some three just feeder pigs.
Oh, okay.
Fast growing pigs. That was last year. We put those in the freezer.
Oh, cool.
Because it takes long for Coonie to grow. So
yeah,
we need feeder pigs in the meantime.
Yeah.
What, so you're talking about eventually, probably once you get your fencing done, you're going to get more cows. Mm-hmm. Have you thought about what kind of breed, what you might get?
I don't know. I mean, I would like to try Dexter.
Okay.
Just a little bit smaller. But honestly, it'll probably be whatever cow I can get.
Whatever's available.
Yeah. Sure. I'm the same way with feeder pigs. Like, honestly, it doesn't matter to me what pig, just as long as it's a decent price and if they're available, whatever's available, really, honestly. Yeah. I think the last two cows we had were one of them was an Angus, one of them was a Jersey Angus.
Oh, okay.
And that was no reason. It was just, that was what the guy was selling.
Yeah. And how long did you have them for, those two?
We only had them a year, and when we got them, they were already a year old.
Okay. So they were 2 years old when you butchered them, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. And how did they flesh out as far as conversion? Were you happy with the amount of beef and all that good stuff?
Yeah, we were. I think they were a little on the smaller side. The Jersey Angus was a little bit bigger, was taller. But the other Angus one, he seemed kind of small to me. But another reason why we butchered them is because our property here is a horse property. And so there was a lot of horses on it. And so it's very, the land is not very good. Very compacted. Just hardly anything grows in certain spots. So I kind of felt bad for them because they want to eat grass, but our land wasn't very great. So I would buy hay throughout summer too. Just because I felt bad about it. But you know, that's why we butchered them, really, because I felt like we didn't have enough to feed them. So we probably could have waited another year, for them at least. So, you know, they were a little bit on the smaller side. That's probably why we're already running out of beef. Either that or we just eat a lot of beef.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it was good. It was a good experience. We butchered them here ourselves.
Very cool.
So that was, you know, that large of an animal, butchering that large of an animal. I'm glad they were the size that they were.
Or bigger, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if they're any bigger, then, you know, you got to think about that. If you're going to be butchering animals, you don't necessarily need them giant. You know, you don't need to make the biggest, giantest pig you could possibly raise if you're going to butcher it yourself.
Yeah, sure.
Because you got to think about hoisting it up. You got to think about how much you got to manhandle this large beast. And it's like, how are you going to do that? You know, you need a tractor. We don't have a tractor. So I got to figure out how to do this stuff, you know, manually.
Yeah. Well,
yeah. And then you got to hang it right after. You got to age it or however you're going to hang it. And you got to be able to facilitate that. So there's a lot of logistics to that.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
Well, this has been awesome, Jason. Yeah, I appreciate you taking the time. I think this is an incredibly inspirational story that many can draw from and get a lot of encouragement from, and just a lot of great pointers if you're considering this homesteading lifestyle, or if you're feeling this call back to the land, or if you're kind of part of this homestead tsunami that Joel Salatin is writing about. I mean, Jason's story. And so, Jason, before we part ways, where can everybody find you?
Yeah, you can find me on sowtheland.com. We're also on YouTube. Just type in Sow the Land, Instagram, Facebook, and all the social medias.
Awesome. Great.
Good deal. Yeah, and then you got the podcast that's on all your podcast. What's the name of the podcast again?
Homestead Shop Talk Podcast. And we're on iTunes, Spotify, and we're also on YouTube.
Okay. Awesome.
Great. And before we close, I think Buddy wanted us to plug his new Buddy's Making Nice Cheese.
Yeah.
And for anybody who can watch our shorts, he just made a custom belt for one of our neighbors.
Yeah, beautiful belt.
So Buddy's getting into the leather works. And so he's making nice cheese. Are these going to go up on the website?
Yeah, they're going to go up on the website soon. Yeah, I need to take some photos of them. Yeah.
Yeah, so be checking that out.
He's getting into the leather stuff. He's loving that. But yeah, with all that said, remember to go check out the Food Forest in the Box and the TexasBoys.com. The Food Forest in the Box is not going to be on the website for much longer, probably only for
maybe 30 days.
Yeah, probably. For another 30 days. Maybe we have some really cold weather coming in, and that will be totally
the end of
the Food Forest in the Box. And then we will have to prune down all of the trees. So get it while it lasts. And also there's honey and coffee and all types of awesome goodies over there. And I think that's it.
That's it. Thank you, Jason, for your time. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much.
And remember, y'all, stay fearless, my friends.